Welcome to Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. Coal remains a significant source of energy in America. According to the Union of Concerned Scientists, coal generates some 44% of our electricity. It also is a major source of pollution, and that, combined with longstanding health concerns for coal miners, has led to efforts to develop so-called clean coal technology, ways to extract the energy from coal we all want and use, but with a reduced threat to our health and well-being. Today on the program, we'll examine the concept of clean coal and learn more about research currently underway to develop it. In a few minutes, we'll talk with Thomas Wiltowski, director of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University, and Evan Tracy from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. But first, we are going to talk about the potential health effects of coal. Chris Hamby is a reporter with the Center for Public Integrity, and last fall, along with NPR, the Center for Public Integrity examined a recent resurgence in the number of black lung cases among coal miners and some gaps in the measurement and control of coal mine dust, the source of black lung. Chris Hamby, welcome to Focus. Glad to have you with us. First, take us through your investigation last summer along with NPR and the Charleston Gazette into an apparently dramatic increase in black lung cases in Appalachia. What gave rise to this increase?
Well, there are multiple theories about what is really going on here, but some of the most prominent ones include that miners today are breathing a more potent mix of dust. The coal that miners are trying to get at now is largely surrounded by rock, and so the seams are thinner. And what that means is that you have to cut more rock to get to it. That, in combination with the more powerful mining machines that we've now developed, means that you're going to be breathing more rock, which can cause a more aggressive form of disease in miners. Another aspect is miners are working longer hours, 10 hours, 12 hours. And then sort of a third component is the increased production from development of machines like longwall shears that can carve out huge swaths of coal in a relatively short period of time. We heard over and over from miners of just, you know, not even being able to see your hand in front of your face, just constantly breathing massive amounts of dust that can't be controlled.
I guess a lot of us have this perception in our minds of the coal miner of the maybe the 1950s or 60s with the pickaxe and sort of working away at a small piece of rock along a wall or something like that. But it sounds like that's really not the way it works anymore.
Yeah, mining has evolved significantly, and the machines, a lot of what is done now is with either a continuous mining machine or a longwall shearer, and both of these are just large pieces of equipment that can carve out huge amounts of coal very quickly, and they generate a lot of dust. The dust is very fine, so it works its way deep into the lungs of these miners, and it really is something that has increased exposure fairly significantly over recent decades.
There has been, in those recent decades, a system in place designed to detect and control the coal dust that miners are exposed to. Why was that system apparently not working?
Well, there are a couple of things going on here, and one is that it's long been known, it's sort of a dirty little secret of the mining industry, that there's rampant cheating, and that's what we found when in talking to miners and in looking at records, is that there are all sorts of things that you can do to manipulate the samples that you're supposed to take to ensure that dust levels are under control. So things like taking the sample that's supposed to be worn on the miner and actually hanging it in clean air in the near the entrance of the mine, or we heard about the samples ending up in lunch boxes or mine offices and things like that. And then there's sort of the second part of that is that there are all sorts of loopholes and sort of, I guess one could call it legal cheating. And that includes things like, you know, the samples only occur for 8 hours, even if the miner works 8 or 12. Hmm. Mining companies can, if an inspector comes in, they can mine half as much coal as they normally do, which creates a lot less dust. And then finally, kind of the way that you would, even if you do get caught with a sample that's over the limit, all you have to do is submit 5 of your own samples that show that you're in compliance, and it's essentially they'll tear up your ticket for you.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. We're talking about the health effects of coal and how it's regulated with Chris Hamby, reporter with the Center for Public Integrity, which last fall, along with NPR, examined a recent resurgence in the number of black lung cases among coal miners and some gaps in the measurement and control of coal mine dust, the source of black lung. A couple of months after your investigation, federal regulators, I guess this would have been in September, announced the results of inspections targeting 13 coal mines in 7 states that had previously been cited for violations involving excessive coal dust. Do you think this was prompted by your investigation?
Well, the administration would not say so, but the timing certainly suggests that they did. And what we do know is that after our investigation, that they convened a group of experts and lawyers to look at ways that they might improve enforcement under the existing rules, and then, of course, there are also the proposed rules that would reduce exposures to dust.
Before we leave those inspections behind, in general terms, what did they find once they did these inspections?
They cited a host of serious dust-related violations, and in some cases they actually forced a temporary closure of parts of the mine for various hazards.
Excessive coal dust was cited as a factor in the Upper Big Branch coal mine explosion in West Virginia back in 2010 that our listeners may recall killed 29 coal miners. What role can federal regulators play in ensuring coal miner safety?
Well, when Joe Maine took over as the head of the Mine Safety and Health Administration, appointed by Obama, he made this an issue. He launched a campaign in Black Lung Now, and some of that involves stepped-up enforcement, and some of that, a large piece of that, is a proposed rule that would cut the exposure limit in half, which is something that the government research agency recommended in 1995, actually. And then it would introduce the use of continuous personal dust monitors. So these are things that miners would wear and would give you a real-time readout of how much dust you're being exposed to, rather than having a pump that has to be sent to a lab and you get the results back 2 weeks later. And there are other provisions in there, like making sampling more representative of the actual conditions in the mine, that would sort of close a lot of the loopholes that we're talking about. One of the biggest recommendations from a report that came out in the 1990s was that the system for sampling for dust that involves allowing the coal mine operators themselves to conduct a lot of the samples is fundamentally flawed, and they recommended that MSHA take control of the entire thing. That is not included in the proposal, and that's one thing that a lot of people are disappointed in, but when we talked with Joe Maine, he said it's just simply a massive task for the federal government to take on.
Well, and that raises a bigger picture question, which is, and this is true for really any industry, there are always concerns about health or environmental hazards associated with any kind of industry. And those within the industry typically will say, well, the solution is less regulation so that we can develop new technologies that allow us to avoid these kinds of scenarios. And then there'll be those outside of the industry who will say, no, the solution is more regulation to ensure that the practices you're doing now are appropriate. Whether you're talking about the Mine Safety or Health and Health Administration or the EPA or any other administration, based off of your work on this topic and your investigations, do these administrations have the proper teeth to effectively monitor health safety for coal miners or environmental safety or whatever the case may be?
Well, the Mine Safety and Health Administration has said that basically, you know, they're constrained by obviously resources, which is an issue with most administrative agencies, but they're also constrained by the statute that gives them their authority and the regulations that are in place, and that's why they've proposed these rules. But of course, there are a lot of political realities that come along with proposing a rule, And, of course, with this particular rule to reduce miners' exposure to coal dust, it has been opposed strongly by House Republicans, and they demanded a study by the Government Accountability Office to see if it was actually necessary. That study came back and affirmed that, yes, the rule was based on solid science, and it did support the administration's proposal. But they've continued to oppose the rule, and as yet it has not been issued. So, you know, it's both a resource issue and a political will issue.
Before we let you go, we are about to speak with a representative of a coal industry coalition and a researcher seeking to develop new so-called clean coal technologies. Based on what you've reported on, the cases of black lung and how the industry has been monitoring coal dust levels for miners, what sort of research and technology would you like to see developed inside or outside of the industry to make the process of extracting coal safer and healthier?
Well, I think a lot of the things that would control coal dust have been recognized for a long time. It's just a matter of actually using them. I mean, these are pretty basic things like hanging ventilation curtains and making sure that you're mining according to your plan, that your ventilation is correct, that your water sprays on your mining machines are working correctly to suppress the dust. The problem is just that there's not an economic incentive right now to do those things necessarily. Now, there may be other incentives to do those things, but so the technology in large part is there. It's more an issue of just political will and resources, as I said.
Chris Ambie is a reporter with the Center for Public Integrity. His focus is on the environment and workplace safety. Chris, thanks so much for talking with us today.
Thanks for having me.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and we will shift our attention now to efforts among researchers and the coal industry itself to develop safer, healthier, more environmentally friendly ways to extract and derive energy from coal. And we have two guests joining us for the remainder of the hour. Thomas Wiltowski is director of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University. Thomas Wiltowski, welcome to Focus.
Oh, thank you. Nice to be there.
I'm glad to have you with us. And Evan Tracy is Senior VP of Communications from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. That's a coalition of the coal industry. Evan Tracy, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having us.
Glad to have you with us. And as we continue our conversation and turn our attention to so-called clean coal, we welcome your questions and comments at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or you can share your thoughts on Facebook or Twitter. You can find us on either one at Focus 580. The phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. And Thomas, let me begin with you. And I imagine the overarching question, the one we should begin with, is there such a thing as clean coal?
Yes, it is. And actually, let me start. Before I will answer your question, I would like to add something what we just discussed a few minutes ago.
Okay.
Here at SIU, actually, one of our colleagues is very successful in developing the new technology for dust control. And as a matter of fact, this year we are setting up the center, training center for coal miners. And when I visited the coal mine a couple of days ago, when this technology was tested, actually it's really tremendous, it's nice. So I'm very optimistic. But coming back into your question, yes, it is. And when you look at the oil and coal, from the chemical point of view, those two, they are actually practically the same. The difference is the physical-chemical properties. One is solid and other is liquid. Now, speaking about the clean coal, when we discussed this like 30 years ago, of course, coal is dirty, coal was dirty, and the methods which you use actually or extract energy from coal was not really environmental and user-friendly. Today, at today's technology, actually, we can completely change the pictures, and we have the new technologies, which we supposed to, and we are slowly, but we are actually introducing. Let's have example as a sulfur in the coal. Long time ago, it was a problem. Acid rain, corrosion, and of course, the health problem, emission. Right now, talk to farmers are complaining that we don't have enough sulfur in the soil, so there is a problem. So we do have the technology, and I'm very optimistic in it.
Well, However, the coal itself, this is the part where, you know, and this is a layman's point of view, so maybe I'm not understanding, but I don't see how the coal itself has changed at all. It's still, there's still dust from that coal,
of
right?
Of course it is.
Right?
Of course it is, but we are learning more how to control it. And actually, we do have devices when you are extracting the coal, when you are mining the coal. One of the examples was given the curtains, of course. This is not super. This is not very highly efficient. But when you will introduce some special jet sprayers, and when you introduce some other tricks, actually, how to catch the dust when at the moment when it's being produced, when coal is being extracted and collected and removed from the coal mine, then that's the point.
Evan, let me bring you in at this point. When we talk about clean coal, we're not necessarily talking about just, you know, like a piece of coal that is cleaner, period. We're talking about a variety of efforts, right?
Of course.
Correct. And I couldn't have said it better myself than your other guest here, the doctor. It's, you know, there's a process. I mean, look, you know, clean coal is, in some cases, I think, you know, it will someday win this argument when people don't use the word so-called in front of the words clean coal.
Okay.
And a lot of this is a perception problem that occurred kind of back during the cap and trade debate where everybody associated clean coal with carbon capture and storage. There's actually, you know, probably depending on how you add them all up, there's probably, you know, 16 to 18 different technologies in practice today that burn coal more cleanly and more efficiently, you know, that are constantly being put into practice at the various, you know, at the various touch points. So
can you offer a couple of examples just right off the bat?
Well, sure. I mean, you know, one of the shining examples in your state is the Prairie State generating system. I mean, this is a, you know, super critical, you know, facility where, you know, if you to go down there, and again, not to get, you know, too technical, because I could get into things like electrostatic participators and, you know, ESP with bag houses and supercritical versus officer supercritical, but the giant clicking sound will be people turning off their radios trying to understand all the engineering speak. But what you've got is you've got a 21st century coal plant that is being built. You know, it's often you want to talk to people about cars. I mean, cars that were on the road 30 years ago are much different than cars that are on the road today, and the technologies that are in place now have done remarkable things as far as reducing emissions and particulate matter, in some cases up to 90%, and in some cases even, you know, greater than that. And those are technologies that let us use coal more efficiently. You know, when you burn less coal, there's less emissions. So, you know, efficiency is very important, and that's what you find in these ultra-supercritical and supercritical sites. But, you know, these are the technologies that are in play now, but they, you know, again, we'll have, you know, entirely new sets of technology, you know, for the next 30 years if the country remains committed to using one of its most affordable and abundant resources.
Thomas Woltowski, Evan Tracy referenced the Prairie State Energy Campus, which is in Marissa, Illinois. Can you give us a little bit of a sense of, I understand this is maybe one of the first of its kind in the U.S., why it's located in Illinois and what it is they're trying to do there?
Oh, very simple. Illinois has a lot of coal resources. And actually, talking about the Prairie State, that's a coal mine and power plant which I visited a few days ago.
Yeah.
And I was really impressed. And actually, this is so-called mine mouse power plant. There is no problem with the transporting the coal. Coal mine is located on the other side of the road. So the time between the coal is being mined to coal being burned, actually, in the boiler is about 6 hours. That's beautiful. So it's reducing the cost.
Well, other than reducing costs, what does that have any impact in terms of environmental emissions, safety, anything like that?
Yes, this power plant operates ultra supercritical conditions. It means that we have the higher pressure, higher temperature, the combustion is more efficient. It means that producing the same amount of electricity, actually we are using less coal. That's the key point. So it means more efficient, cleaner combustion, and when you drive by this power plant, practically you see only steam leaving, actually, from the water cooling towers. So that's the state of the art. As a matter of fact, this is the newest coal-fired power plant in the U.S. and very modern. Look at the other countries. Look at Germany. Germany opened last year a huge power plant, state of the art, similar like power, like Prairie State, near Düsseldorf. So actually there are technologies, and this is what I'm trying to say. We have to learn. This is never-ending process, how we can improve efficiency, how we can eliminate emission, practically not eliminate, but make so-called near zero emission. We have to follow, unfortunately, thermodynamics. So we have the tools in our hands. Why not doing this?
So are we, do you see the possibility of, within a reasonable period of time, getting to the point where we are talking about near zero emissions from coal?
Yes, we can. And for instance, gasification, the process which is known for a long time. We have few power plants in the U.S. We have several around the world. But actually, in the case of the gasification, you are dramatically increasing the efficiency. At the same time, you are lowering actual emission. We are practically near zero emission. We can make the gasification when the only component which you leave actually is carbon dioxide. Then with carbon dioxide, we can make geological sequestration, or what I more believe, chemical sequestration, and producing some other products of chemicals from carbon dioxide. So this is the future.
Let me slow you down a little bit on the terminology, because this is something that I gather is sort of a significant element of the process.
Sure.
But I don't know if people understand what you mean by sequestration in this context, a different context than the sequestration we've been talking about in the federal budget. But what do you mean by sequestration when it comes to
storing coal? What we are actually exploring around the world, storing carbon dioxide underground, pumping it deep underground, and there is a reaction between all those minerals over there and carbon dioxide making carbonates. They stayed over there. That's the geological sequestration. When I'm using the term chemical sequestration, it means that we can separate carbon dioxide out of the flue gas or syngas when you are talking in terms of the gasification, and then we can make secondary reaction actually producing some chemicals out of it. So in this case, efficiency will go up and we will reduce, or we will reach that the situation when we can use the term near zero emission.
One of the challenges that sometimes comes up when it comes to developing new technologies that are more environmentally friendly is this idea of, oh, we've come up with a way to do something, it's cleaner, however, we have to use more energy in order to make this process work. Is there other energy that is consumed or needs to be, you know, involved in the process of, say, converting coal into other forms of energy? I mean, how does that process work?
Actually, it is a very good question. Yes and no. Yes, because nothing is free, as you can figure it out, and all of us, we know. But then when you are developing any new process, not necessarily in this area, you have to always make the process efficient and no energy requiring. So the balance for energy is this. Okay, I'm producing, let's say, 10 kilowatts, but I'm using 1 kilowatt to produce those 10 kilowatts. So my energy balance is 9 kilowatts. I'm using this, of course, as an example, as my profit. I mean, something what I'm producing. And this is the way which we're supposed to go. I'm not worried about this, that I will use more energy to produce or to utilize clean coal technologies and use and produce electricity out of it.
Well, I guess maybe the question is whether the math suggests that we're not using as much energy to make this process work. Because ultimately, if it's as much energy goes into the process of, for example, converting coal into another form of energy in a natural gas or liquid fuel or the sequestration process or what have you, if that ends up being, you're using just as much energy to make that happen as you were using, you would not have used without going through that process, then it doesn't necessarily make it any, you know, the net any cleaner. You know what I mean?
Yes, I know what you mean. And the answer is very simple. No. Actually, we are using less energy to produce. Let me ask you this. Liquid fuels, transportation fuels, Let's say that you have the access to electricity, not very expensive, and you have the coal. Now, of course, transferring the coal into liquid fuels requires some processes. It means requires some energy. But when you will go into the really energy calculation and balance, we are the winners. It means that we are gaining something. This actually comes to one of the first questions. Can we produce energy? No. We can only transfer one form of energy to another one. For instance, when we have the piece of coal has a chemical energy. Then we are producing out of this heat, which is another form of energy. Then heat is being transferred to mechanical energy. So at this point, we are losing something. This is what second law of thermodynamics is telling us. Our point and our goal actually is to minimize those losses. It means that we have to do everything to utilize as little as possible energy to produce some other forms. Let's say liquid fuels as an example.
Evan, Thomas Wiltowski spoke earlier about Germany as an example of a nation that's working on this technology, maybe a little more aggressively even than we are here in the U.S. What about other countries? Are there some other nations, in your view, that are sort of ahead of us in terms of the development of technologies that allow us to capture energy from coals in ways that maybe are less harmful?
Yeah, you know, and this is sort of the, you know, the unhappy part of the story is that because of the regulatory environment here in the U.S., a lot of the, you know, advanced clean coal technologies are really being developed in other countries. China is one that is, you know, investing a lot of money. Now, you know, China builds an awful lot of coal plants. They're obviously a growing economy, and it's a much different sort of regulatory environment over there than it is over here. And by no means am I saying we should adopt, you know, their form of regulation.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, their pollution is so bad it is visible from space. So
right.
Maybe we don't want to do that.
I don't want to confuse this. But China is also, you know, wildly aware of the cost of their growing economy, and is investing an awful lot into various forms of clean coal technology. And in a lot of ways, you know, China and Germany are really taking the lead, you know, two, you know, very developed and growing economies. Certainly you look at Europe and nobody's going to confuse, you know, Berlin with Beijing as far as the, you know, where those two economies are. And, you know, these are just two examples of places that are really building some state-of-the-art clean coal technologies, and they're putting them into immediate practice. And, you know, again, the only thing sort of wrong with this picture is that these aren't being developed in the United States. Now, you know, there is something, you know, the United States has developed technologies that other countries have taken our investment and our opportunity costs and put to use in there. And this may just be a case of, you know, technological advancements and improvements that are going to be made in other countries that will ultimately find their way to the United States. I mean, we are the Saudi Arabia of coal. That's not going to change. This, you know, we have, you know, depending on the estimates you look at, centuries and centuries of supply of coal in this country. So it's hard to say that we will ever get to the point of the United States that won't be using coal to generate electricity. The utilities, they want fuel diversity. You know, obviously, low cost and affordable power are key to growing economies. So, you know, it's hard to say that you know, we will be, you know, that short-sighted that we will not pursue clean coal technologies. The only real problem right now is that a lot of the leadership on this is happening in other countries. So, you know, again, there could be some benefit where we'll take what other countries have learned and apply it here eventually, but this is something that the United States should probably be leading on. And I've met with, you know, multiple clean coal technology providers. I mean, there's some fascinating things going on in carbon capture with algae and advanced oil recovery. And, you know, these people, you know, they hand me their business cards and there's, you know, English on one side and Chinese on the other, because that's where this investment is taking place. And that's something that, you know, from our standpoint needs to shift back to where the United States takes on this leadership.
And again, I guess I should clarify. I mean, you represent a coalition of the coal industry.
We represent the coal-based electricity industry. So
okay.
we you know, certainly have the coal producers as our members, but we also have the utilities, co-ops, the railroads, a bunch of the equipment makers, and some of the technology companies as well. So we are all the touch points on the coal-based electricity industry.
And you noted a couple of minutes ago that you believe one of the reasons that the U.S. is lagging behind has to do with regulations.
It's regulation, but it's also, I think, a lack of clarity. I mean, the difference between China and the U.S. right now is if China wants to build a power plant, it takes about 18 months. If the U.S. Wants to do it, it takes about 18 years. And right now, I think, you know, most in the utility industry are having a little trouble trying to figure out where the goalposts are going to be, and they have to make these decisions, you know, now as far as future plants go. So it's created a lot of uncertainty. You know, this is not an industry that opposes regulation. I want to be very clear on that, is that this is, I think, for the most part, if you were to ask our membership, you know, they want to be for something, but they also want to know kind of where, you know, where the regulations are going to be drawn, where the lines are going to be drawn, so they can start to make these decisions. Because again, the utilities, they want fuel diversity. They don't want to have to rely on any single source, whether they want to rely on everything, coal, gas, renewables, nuclear. They want to, you know, basically have as many arrows in their quiver as possible. And I think, you know, they, you know, for all the happy talk around shale gas, it still doesn't make them amenable to the laws of supply and demand. So, you know, that's really, I think, what you would find from our industry.
So are you saying, just to make sure that I'm clear on this, that what's happening is that the regulations that currently exist that are designed to ensure that any power plants that are built in an environmentally friendly fashion, or, you know, the health concerns are alleviated, or any other challenges that may come before, those regulations are actually holding back the ability to develop plants, build plants that actually would be more environmentally friendly than what we currently use.
Right. I mean, take for instance, there's a plant in Mississippi that's called Kemper. It's a Southern Company plant. It comes online later this year. It's an ultra supercritical with carbon capture used for advanced oil recovery. I mean, this plant will be as clean than a lot of plants that use natural gas. That plant right now, I think, if you ask their people, barely meets the current standard. You know, so if the standard continues to move, it makes it very hard for the industry to sort of plan and say, okay, here's what the next plant needs to look like. And again, all of these things with plant siting, you know, not every plant can be a Prairie State, not every plant can be a Kemper. So the real issue right now is what's going to happen. You know, what are new plant standards going to be held to? If you hold coal to the same standard that you hold, you know, gas or nuclear, it's going to be a very hard standard to meet. If you in return then to say, okay, you know, existing coal plants need to meet these new standards if you want to go change a door frame. Those are really the issues right now that I think the industry faces, is just understanding from the administration, from a regulation standpoint, where those regulations are going to be. And from their standpoint, they would like them to be reasonable, that take into account what is possible from a a current technology environment, and understand that there's an incentive to continue to develop clean coal technologies for in the future. You take, there's a plant in West Virginia, which was a demonstration project by the company AEP called Plant Mountaineer, which was a, you know, carbon capture and storage project, but they had to simply stop because they couldn't get to the rate recovery that they would needed to put this plant, you know, continually through. And then also there wasn't a standard set for carbon emissions. So, you know, those are things, I think, from a regulation standpoint, that people are looking for some certainty out of Washington, but also some reasonable regulations that understand the difference between the different fuel types.
This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen, and my guests are Thomas Woltowski, director of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University, and Evan Tracy, senior VP of communications from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. We're discussing the concept of clean coal and efforts to research and develop technology that may allow coal to be extracted more safely and cleanly, or converted to a more environmentally friendly form of energy. We welcome your questions and comments for our guests at 333-9455. or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu or find us on Facebook and Twitter at Focus 580. Those phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. We'll have more after a short break. This is Focus. This is Focus. I'm Craig Cohen. We're discussing the concept of clean coal technologies and research with Thomas Wiltowski, director of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University, and Evan Tracy, senior VP of communications from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. We welcome your questions and comments this morning at 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. You can also email us at will-talk@illinois.edu, or you can share your thoughts on Facebook or Twitter. Find us on either at Focus 580. Phone numbers again, 333-9455 or 800-222-9455. Thomas Wiltowski, what sort of research are you doing at SIU to develop healthier, more environmentally friendly ways to extract energy from coal?
Oh, we are doing actually different research here. I'm not talking about the coal mining. That's a separate area of my colleagues from Department of Mining Engineering. But we are working here on the new technologies. Point number one, we are trying to improve the efficiency of the coal gasification. As I mentioned briefly a few minutes ago, coal gasification is one of the future ways, actually, for utilizing coal in electricity production, and not only electricity, but also liquid fuels. So coal gasification, then we can actually achieve so-called near-zero emission standards, or TERM, if you wish. Second, once you have the syngas, the huge area right now, which is a widely researched, is actually how to produce liquid fuels. How we can import less oil and produce our domestic resources, which is coal. We have plenty of coal here in the U.S., and produce liquid transportation fuels. And another research area which you are growing, actually building right now, is chemical looping. This is a typical engineering term, but what about when instead of using air for coal combustion, I can use pure oxygen, but this oxygen actually is coming from some solids, metal oxides. This will make coal combustion much more efficient and cleaner, and the product actually is water, besides the heat, of course, is water and carbon dioxide.
So if I understand correctly, and please correct me if I'm wrong,
sure, yeah.
You heat the coal in a pure oxygen-based environment, and it combusts. It's more combustible that way, and so
of course, yeah, yeah. It's better combustion when you go into the thermodynamic calculation. Right now we are using air. Air, as you know, is 20% of oxygen and 80% nitrogen. So this produce creates actual problems because we have nitrogen oxides or nitrous oxides, nitrogen oxides, which we do have technologies, selective catalytic reduction or catalytic reduction, if you wish. But instead of using oxygen, actually, this can be a pretty nice process, relatively simple. But the problem is how we can furnish the oxygen into the boiler. So oxygen we can separate from air, but this is costly process. But when we can use some metal oxides and reduce them inside the boiler, then this probably will benefit. So this is another area which is widely searched around the world. We have the Ohio, for instance, few colleagues over there that are working in this area. We are trying to make a little bit new approach for it. There are several engineering problems, if I can use this word, how to make the process more efficient. So we are taking a little bit different approach. So this is just few of the areas which you are trying to make coal more efficient and make it more user-friendly.
You said that you're working on, your group is working on coal gasification and utilization.
Yes.
And that sort of thing. But you said some of your colleagues work on ways to make coal mining a little bit safer.
Yes.
It seems like that might be a very big challenge. At a certain point, ultimately, you need to be able to get the coal from the ground, from wherever you're finding it. Is there potential for developing safer ways to do that? I mean, we heard earlier about technology that allows us to get large sheets of coal out, you know, all at once in a different way than maybe we mined for coal 40, 50 years ago. But is there a way that Are there ideas being floated for ways to do it in a much safer fashion for the coal miners themselves?
It is. I'm not a real expert, but what I know from my colleagues and helping them in partially in their research is actually we have two issues here. First, as you mentioned, how to produce coal. It means how to mine the coal. Friendly way, safer way, and then how to utilize this coal. So speaking about the first part of this, actually how we can make the job for miners more secure. This is what we started actually this program about the coal dust, right? Which is
right.
Really creates the problem. And I already mentioned one of our colleagues has a brilliant idea how to eliminate the dust, how to capture the dust actually at the moment when it's being formed. And quite soon, I believe in 3 or 4 months, we have a special training center here for coal miners how to use this new technology. So I'm extremely excited about this. Secondly, this is another question which I'm always asking a few of my colleagues. Do we really have to mine the coal? This is the area widely, actually, especially in Europe, actually, in Australia, tested right now is so-called underground coal gasification. This is what we have part of our involvement in this activity. It means you don't have to mine the coal. You can separate the coal areas underground and gasify it underground, and then the product go into the surface.
Again, this is the layman in me wondering. As soon as I hear this, what occurs to me is, wow, whatever that process is, if there has to be a certain amount of, there has to be some sort of combustion that takes place, wouldn't that lead to explosions, lead to circumstances where, you know, cave-ins or, I don't know, just how would you do that in a safe way?
This is not really combustion. Combustion, in chemical terms, is so-called fully oxidation process. Now we are talking about the selective oxidation. It means you are stopping combustion at a certain level. That's gasification.
Okay.
So in this case, controlling, this is what you are saying, that it can be explosive or whatever. No, not necessary. We have the tools how to measure it. We have the tools how to control it.
So you want to, essentially, it would be creating the same environment that you would normally have. You know, you normally have some sort of controlled space where you do this gasification. You actually do it right there where the coal currently exists.
Yes, and I was witness actually in Germany a couple of years ago when they identified a big chunk of coal. I'm using this term.
Yeah.
And it was like, let's say, 100 feet by 250 feet and about 10 feet thick. And they separate from the other neighbor's coal. And then they make this gasification. And I believe, I was asking myself, hey, wait a moment, what will happen? But actually, those guys, they developed the tools and are known, actually, describing the literature. When something goes wrong, how to stop it? But actually, nothing went wrong. Actually, they got beautiful products, the syngas and the pretty nice composition, which can be used later on to produce the liquid fuels or generate electricity. So there is a lot of tools which you have to explore. And as someone mentioned, we have to be the leader here. We have the smart people. We have the technologies, you know. We have the concepts. But I visited China last year, and I saw what those guys are doing in Beijing, National Institute of Clean Energy, beautiful facility. A lot of actually professors from U.S. are working over there. So they have a lot of funding and you know, exploring this kind of the stuff. So I believe maybe it is too optimistic, but sky is the limit. I'm, as a being researcher, I believe in science and engineering.
Taking that optimistic look, Evan Tracy, what is the FutureGen 2.0 experiment?
Well, the FutureGen is it's a project there in your backyard in Illinois, and it's a public private partnership, basically. I mean, there's certainly a lot of, Department of Energy and government investment in this. And really what the goal of the FutureGen project has been and is to be able to show that you can, you know, what's called retrofitting an old existing coal-fired power plant with a lot of the new zero emissions technologies. And, you know, it's one of these that it dates back to the Bush era, demonstration project on clean coal technology, and it has not moved, I think, as swiftly as folks would have liked, but it still continues to move forward. And these are the kind of projects. Futures End, Taylorville's another one.
This is Tenaskis proposing an energy center in Taylorville.
Yeah, Taylorville's another one that's that's a build from scratch, as I believe, which is another, these are going to be having these sort of partnerships, having these kind of investments, will be critical to a future for coal. So it's certainly from our standpoint, we want to see these projects continue to move forward and continue to, make these early moon launches, if you will, as we start to move towards 21st century coal. And again, there are plants, Turk in Arkansas, Prairie State, which we've already talked about, Kemper in Mississippi. Duke Power's got one in Indiana. So, I mean, there are starting to move these into commercial scale projects, but, more work needs to be done. More research needs to be done. Those are kind of the, for Illinois standpoint, they really have the chance to be a leader, not just in the U.S., but globally on some of the clean coal technologies and these next generation of coal-fired power plants.
Now, again, some of these are proposed projects.
Right.
So, for example, this energy center in Taylorville that would convert coal into methane to generate electricity, that's something the General Assembly has not yet approved, right?
Right. It's not yet been approved, but there's, it's like any other big project. It seems to, gain a lot of momentum, then the momentum slows down. I think as recently as the last week of the month, there seemed to be some new political support on there from some of the newly elected officials out there. So, it's hard to build a power plant without bringing politics into it.
Thomas Woltowski, what is maybe the single most significant step forward we could take if there was one project or one concept that you'd really like to see industry, government, everyone sort of coalesce around and say, let's go full bore towards this? What would it be?
I will not say single. Maybe if you can give me the permission, I will identify two.
Okay, that's fine.
One is coal gasification with near zero emission, and another is coal to liquid or coal to transportation fuels, which requires gasification.
All right. So again, this gasification, but what we're talking about is converting coal into methane or some other gas.
No, syngas, actually, because then you can produce methane if you wish. Then it's giving... Gasification actually is giving us a nice freedom of the products. Depends on the market demand.
All right, so it's converted to a gas, then you can turn it into a liquid fuel.
Chemicals, liquid fuels, heat, electricity. Whatever.
You could do hydrogen to fuel your car.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And so that's the direction you'd like to see
right.
Things go. Evan Tracy, how about you?
Yeah, I would certainly concur. I mean, again, I think from our standpoint, what we would like to see is kind of a less hostile posture towards coal. I think from our standpoint, there's a lot of great technologies out there that are working today. They obviously require a lot of investment, and there's a number of coal-fired power plants out there that are going to be sort of forced to close down because of policies. That obviously could benefit from investment and further development of this technology. Again, this isn't this is like buying a new car once every 30 years. I mean, if you look at the technology that exists in a car today, I remember the old Plymouth Valiant that I used to drive that would have been about 30 years old today that had an AM radio and a couple of buttons, and the cars you're buying today have iPads in them. So, technology changes, efficiency changes, and the U.S. needs to kind of continue to lead on this and invest in research and invest in technology, but also create a regulatory environment that allows the guys that have to make these investments and site these plants enough certainty to go forward and do that. So I think there's lots of great technologies out there. There's lots of uses for CO2, the algae thing is they're using it in China now to enrich the soil, to increase more crops. And so there's lots of great technologies. I just would like to see the U.S. continue to be a leader in this space and to look at what the best mix is. Because, again, when you look at this from a true pragmatic sense, I mean, we have more coal in this country than any other country on Earth. And we're going to end up exporting that coal, and we're going to end up having to import those technologies if we're not leaders.
That will have to be our final word. Evan Tracy is Senior VP of Communications from the American Coalition for Clean Coal Electricity. Evan, thanks for talking with us today.
Sure, happy to have it. Thanks for the opportunity.
And Thomas Wiltowski is Director of the Coal Research Center at Southern Illinois University. Thank you for being with us as well.
Thank you very much.
We welcome any additional thoughts that you may have about today's program on our website. You can go to will.illinois.edu/focus and leave comments there. If you know anybody who might enjoy hearing Focus but lives outside of our listening area, let them know we stream the program live every day at will.illinois.edu. On tomorrow's show, social movements, many sparked by social media, have rattled the world in recent years. The Occupy Wall Street movement sparked protests across the United States. Networking sites allowed revolutionaries in Tunisia and Egypt to communicate. But Todd Gitlin, a professor of journalism and sociology at Columbia University, argues that face-to-face assemblies are still necessary to further the work of democracy. We will talk tomorrow with Todd Gitlin about social media and the roles websites like Facebook and Twitter play in society. We'll also talk about the limitations social media presents and what it cannot do. Todd Gitlin will speak tomorrow on the U of I campus at 4 p.m. in Knight Auditorium. There's information about that on our website. That's on tomorrow's show. Today's program was produced by Lindsay Moon. Jason Croft is our technical director. I'm Craig Cohen.